Good evening. It's Intuitive Soul Radio with your host, Lori Houston. And tonight, I always get really excited when I have somebody in the studio. And tonight, I have Stacey Grieve, who is the author of Why Are You Waiting? It's not the food that's making you fat. So I'm really excited to have Stacey because we've actually met probably 3 or 4 years ago. And at that time, you were kind of promoting The Secret, which was, you know, kind of new at that time. Nobody had really heard of it. And you'd come to another radio show that I'd done, and we were talking about that. So that was exciting. So welcome, Stacey.
Thank you, Lori. It's nice to be here.
And So usually what happens is we start the show with kind of your personal journey. Now, part of your book, you kind of put in lots of your journey. But, you know, how was it that you got to where you are right now? Like, what parts of it brought you into this space?
There was a number of major occurrences that happened. My journey was a very long and twisty and windy road that took many, many years. And the hope with my book and with the coaching is that I can help speed it up for other people, have a little bit of direction and sort of systemize it. But basically with me, I was a very, very heavy child who grew into an obese adult. And I never had a problem getting the weight off. I could always get the weight off. I'd put on the blinders, get on a diet, and the weight would come off no problem. My challenge, like most people's, was keeping it off once the diet was over. And over the course of my life, I probably gained and shed well over 300 pounds. In fact, I often say I yo-yo dieted my way all the way up to 306 pounds. It was a serious problem. A couple of different occurrences happened. At one point, after my last, I guess, sort of focused, I don't use the word diet anymore. I'm referring to, I don't diet. I don't believe in dieting anymore. And that was actually, let's start there. At one point after I had shed a huge amount of weight and I was the lowest I ever was in my adult life, the weight started to come back, much like it did every single other time. So I started to panic at this point because I had shed about 135 pounds. And so a good 50 to 60 of it had reappeared. And I panicked. So I went to my doctor and I asked for the name of a psychotherapist, someone who specialized in eating disorders. I figured there had to be some reason why I kept doing this to myself. No one was tying me down and force feeding me, right? So I went to see this fellow, and it was very typical. I lied on the couch and told him about my childhood and all that sort of stuff and spent 90 minutes with him. And at the end of it, he said to me, I've got good news and I've got bad news. I'm like, okay, so what's the good news? He said, well, the good news is there's nothing wrong with you. The bad news is I can't help you. Mm-hmm. Well, that wasn't exactly what I was looking for. So we had a little bit of a conversation around that. And he said, basically what I had trained my body to do through periods of dieting, which was deprivation, followed by periods of excess, was I had actually trained my body to respond this way. So his advice to me was that I had to give up dieting and never, ever diet again. Now, at that point, dieting was the only thing I knew, and it was the only way I knew how to get slim. Even if the slim only lasted for a week before it started to rebound, at least it was a little bit of hope. So I left there pretty upset.
I bet.
I remember I was walking down University Avenue in Toronto and there was tears flowing down my face. And I was thinking, well, if I have to give up dieting, like, that's it. It's done. I'm never going to be slim. So after the dust settled a couple of days, I figured if this guy was an expert, I'd better listen to him. So I gave up dieting forever that day. And a funny thing started to happen. The weight started to come off without me actually doing anything about it, consciously doing anything about it. Not all of the weight, but I shifted about 20 pounds in the right direction without me sort of seemingly doing anything. So that kind of, you know, got my attention and allowed me to buy into his part of the program about giving up dieting. I also discovered a book called Fat as a Feminist Issue. It's been around for many, many years. And that book, so the psychotherapist was the first guy, the first part of it. Then finding this book and reading the book where it started to talk about it was what was going on in your mind was a bigger problem than what was going on in your stomach. So that shifted my focus a little bit. And then I started paying attention to what that book was telling me to do and following some of its advice. And sure enough, a few more pounds came off without me seemingly having to do anything. So it was okay. So I'm heading down a different road. Then one day I did go back and I wouldn't necessarily say diet, but I became careful again for a little while. I figured if I can do this well without really being careful, if I'm actually a little bit careful. So I had gotten down to the lowest I had been in my ever adult life. And I was sitting on a beach in Mexico. And I still found myself connecting with the heavy people on the beach. I was looking at them for what were they wearing, what kind of cover-ups were they wearing, how were they hiding their girth. And I had a huge aha at that moment that I still identified with the overweight people, even though I was no longer one of them. Mm-hmm. So that got me thinking about how I saw myself in my mind's eye. And I realized I needed to change my mind's eye view of myself to update it to match the real view of myself, the physical view of myself. So I set out to work on that. So it was really the combination of those three things, where it was how I saw myself giving up dieting forever and learning about how the mind plays a role in the whole mind-body connection. Those three things got me the results I had always been looking for. For over 30 years, I had been dieting and, you know, going to different weight loss groups and that kind of thing. It was really that switch was finally got me to where I wanted to be. And I've been this weight now for about 7 years. I go up and down a tiny little bit, like, you know, just like everybody does, but nothing compared to the way, I mean, I always stay the same size, which is a new phenomena for me. 30 years, it was the other way, so.
Wow. So I really do like your book because it really brings out all of the things that, you know, maybe we may have heard in some way or sometime, but, you know, it kind of connects all the dots and it brings all, it kind of, you know, you see a lovely weaving of a story that, you know, helps you sort of identify areas that we really need to focus on and understand. And one of the first ones that really hit me was, you know, that there's a benefit to the increased weight that we have and the decreased self-esteem. So let's talk about what benefits we have when we, you know, when we have a weight problem.
When I first started talking about weight and it having benefits, a lot of people actually kind of laughed at me. It was like, there's no way there's a benefit. I hate this weight. I don't want it. There can't be a benefit. But again, I come back to, it's all about self-responsibility. If there's, you know, nobody's holding you down and putting the food in your mouth. So there has to be some reason, if this is your challenge, there has to be some reason why you're repeatedly doing that to yourself. My reason would be different than your reason would be different from the person across the street's reason. I can't give you your reason, but what I can do is help give you some tools and some guidelines that will help you uncover your own reasons. Thank you for your comments about my book and how the story wove through, because what I was trying to do with the book was I wanted people to understand that I had been down this journey, that I was leading the bandwagon of the yo-yo dieter at one point in my life. And so it really, thank you. It really means a lot to me that you notice the sort of weaving of the journey. And so what I do is in the book is I bring up something about my own journey and then what might be going on for you and give you some examples and that kind of thing. So for me, the benefits included, I turned out, who knew, turned out I had a real big fear of abandonment. So one of the reasons I kept the weight on was I believed that the weight was keeping me out of a relationship. And so by not getting into a relationship, I couldn't get abandoned in the first place. I know rationally how stupid and crazy that sounds, but the brain is not always rational, right? So it's all stuff going on deeper. And so my hope with the book is that I can help people uncover and root down and really figure out what's going on for them. Another thing that turned out for me was I had a fear of not being likable. And so I could, you know, I would go to a party and I would stand in the corner and no one would talk to me. And I always came home and blamed it on the fact I was fat. No one talked to me because I was fat. I know how ridiculous that is. Lots of heavy people have lots of friends and are very popular. So it wasn't that. It was my attitude about myself and my belief about myself. Mm-hmm. And so that the weight sort of, how the weight served me then was it kept me believing that I wasn't unlikable. And so it proved my own truth to me, even though my truth wasn't really the truth. And that brings up an interesting point about our stories. We all have things we believe about ourselves and the stories we make up about ourselves and why certain things happen to us or don't happen to us. And really most of that is all in our mind. And it's just something we come up with. And so for me, all the stories I had, the weight justified it for me. Once I got rid of the weight, I was still the same person if I didn't change what was going on in my head. And fortunately I was able to, so.
Right. And you worked it out. You figured out a formula that works for you and will work for other people if they, you know, if they get, I mean, I think, you know, a lot of people could read the book and understand it. And I also like the fact that you do coaching because I think, you know, there are a lot of people out there that, I've read this before. I understand these types of things. They don't always work because we need to start coming together as a community. We've got to stop feeling that we are all alone on this planet.
Right.
And that we have to suffer this on our own. And so I think it's a really great idea that you're offering coaching because that's where people need the help. It's, you know, these concepts are great and you can learn a lot from them. And if you're really, really, really motivated, you might be able to, you know, change some of these, but there are some times that you just need to have, the help, mm-hmm. the assistance, the support. We all need support.
And the accountability.
Yeah.
For when you're having those weak moments, and if you're only responsible for yourself, to yourself, you might let yourself off the hook. But mm-hmm. if you're responsible to someone else and have to answer for your actions, you're maybe going to think twice before you step off down the wrong path. Mm-hmm. So it does help.
So what you discovered then was that there were benefits.
There was definitely benefits for me. It was serving me in a way that I wasn't aware of. But once I came to have my awareness, much as everybody needs to be aware, you can't change something until you're aware of it. I was able to find better coping mechanisms, healthier coping mechanisms.
Right. You talk about if we stay in our comfort zone, we'll always have the same results.
Mm-hmm.
And if we stay in our comfort zone, we're stuck.
Mm-hmm.
So what we need to do is to be able to step outside. Talk about that.
A comfort zone is our comfort zone because it's comfortable. It doesn't stress us. It doesn't challenge us. It's like the big comfy couch you can lie down on. But let me ask you, if you're lying down on your big comfy couch in your living room, how often does someone knock at the door? How often does something enter your space that is going to change it? Very, very, very rarely. And for the most part, if you're anything like me, if you're really cozy on that couch, you might not even get up to answer the door. So you need to be careful of it. What our comfort zone really is, it's our habits that we've developed that literally we're comfortable with. I'm comfortable walking down the street. I don't think twice about that. It doesn't cause me any stress to go out the door and walk down the street. But it might cause me some stress to go out the door and walk down an airport runway. It's the same action. It's just doing it in two different places. So that's actually a bad example, but you can see how my comfort zone on my street, I'm comfortable on an airplane thing. I wouldn't be. In terms of our weight and professional and personal, everything comes down to our comfort zone. If you stay inside your little box, your comfort zone's like your box. We all live in every single human on the planet lives inside a box.
And their story.
Some of us have a bigger box. Some of us have a smaller box. We custom tailor the box to what we're comfortable with and what doesn't stress us. In order to change what's going on in your life, though, you need to get to the walls of your box, peer over the edge, and see what's out there. And like anything, when you first do it, the first couple of times, it can be uncomfortable. But repetition is the key. The more you do something, the more comfortable you get with it. Think about the first time you tried to ride a bike. It was, if you were anything like me, it was a few skinned knees and, you know, maybe even a bruised ego. But you kept at it, and eventually it became so comfortable, you were able to do it. And in fact, do it so well that even if you don't do it for a couple of years, you can get back on a bike. I mean, we have an expression in English, you know, it's like riding a bike. It means it's so firmly ingrained in you and comfortable for you that you can keep doing it. But everything in your life that's going to change your life is outside your comfort zone, because your comfort zone has led you to where you are now. It's your comfort zone defines who you are. And until you get outside of it, there won't be any changes. I heard, it was in reference to business, but I heard a speaker say one time that the really successful people in life are the people who get comfortable with being uncomfortable. So they just keep expanding their box, expanding their comfort zone, and looking for new things that they can introduce to themselves. And it's the same thing for people who have some pounds to shed. Your current habits, what's made you comfortable, has gotten you the results that you are. So when you start switching your habits and start switching the way you're doing things in order to get different results, it's going to feel uncomfortable at first. Anything does, whether you're starting a new exercise program, quitting smoking, even moving your desk at the office, creates a certain amount of discomfort. But you know, a couple of days, a few weeks, depending on how big the change is, and all of a sudden it's the new you, and it's not uncomfortable anymore. So with weight, you need to change. You need to step outside your comfort zone.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, the more you're in your comfort zone, it's true. You're just stuck. You're keeping the same patterns. It's like that saying, you know.
The definition of insanity?
Yes, exactly.
Doing the same things over and over again and expecting a different result? Well, you're not going to shed weight if your life is living on the couch, eating a bag of chips for dinner. Like, that's not going to get you the results. And if you're tied to those results or tied to those habits and absolutely refuse to give them up, do yourself a favor and give up the hope of ever achieving the body weight that you want. Get rid of the guilt. Let yourself go. Just accept yourself the way you are, because you're not going to get the results.
And that could work too.
And it can for some people. Yeah.
Sure. Okay, so now we're going to get into, I guess, more the mind aspect of all of this, and how, you know, you have a quote about that Oprah says about, you know, painting your own canvas and thought by thought and choice by choice, and, you know, that, you know, one of the greatest discoveries that we can alter our life by altering our mind, and we have bad attitudes and positive attitudes. And, you know, it's really, our mind. It's very interesting. You talk about also that, you know, the brain is what sees, and all of our five senses occurs in the brain. And I think, you know, we rarely think about that, because we think it's our eyes that are seeing. We think it's our tongue and mouth that's tasting. We think that that's what's going on. But so that's why there's so much power in being able to change our thoughts and our perceptions and making different choices. And let's talk about that.
Everything that happens in the body generates from the brain, originates in the brain and generates from the brain. Some of those thoughts you're aware of, say you go to, again, like we talked about walking, you go to walk out the door. Well, you think, okay, I'm going to walk out the door, and you put on your boots and your coat and whatever, and you walk out the door. But over 95% of the thoughts and functions our body does every day is guided by our mind without us even knowing about it. Think how distracting it would be if you had to consciously keep your heart beating and your lungs pumping air in and out. I mean, you would never get anything else done. That would consume you, just making sure those two things were done. And even that's multitasking, right? You know, that would be difficult. So the brain, the way our brains work is there's the conscious level and the subconscious level. The conscious level is the level we're aware of. It's where you think, oh, it's cold out today, I'm going to put a coat on. Or it's where you think, I'd like that promotion at work, I'm going to stay late for the next few weeks. Or it's where you think, oh, that guy or that girl is cute, I'm going to go talk to them. Those are the conscious things that go on in our mind. Most of it, we are completely unaware of. And most of it is our habits. And our habits really create what I call our autopilot. Most of our day and our night, we're just floating around. We're on autopilot. Lori, have you ever had the experience of where you're driving home and you realize you land at your doorstep and you think, oh my God, I don't have any conscious awareness of the last 10 minutes. You were thinking about something. Have you had that experience?
Not in a long, long time, but yes. Okay. I know exactly what you're talking
about. So
you're
more aware now. That's, that's part of your job and good for you. So I'm glad you answered that way. But I think we've all had experiences like that. Like, totally. How did I get here? The last 5 minutes. Well, that's because your autopilot was taking over. It was just doing its thing and your conscious kind of took a little vacation. We think as humans, we think we're so evolved and we're so on top of things and that we, you know, every single thing we do is our decision. Well, it's so not true. It's our autopilots are taking care of most of the major decisions in our lives. And really our autopilots, how they come to these determinations of what they're going to do is really based on our habits or our paradigms. A paradigm is really just a multitude of habits. And so our habits lead us to where we are and they're our autopilots. So again, until you can become aware of them, you can't possibly change them. So one of my autopilots, the way my subconscious brain worked, is the minute I got stressed, I got up off the couch or whatever I was doing, and I would just sort of gravitate or drift towards whatever food happened to be available, and I would start shoveling it into my mouth. That was the way I dealt with stress. I didn't even know I was doing that most of the time. And I know how silly it sounds that I say I wasn't aware I was doing it, then I get on the scales a week later and wonder where the 10 pounds had come from that I had... Because it was my autopilot. I wasn't consciously making the choice of I am going to go to the fridge to eat. Now that I've increased my awareness about my habits and I know what was going on, it isn't to say I don't occasionally still turn to food as a response, but I know I'm doing it. So I can go to the fridge and go, okay, I know why I'm here. I'm here because I'm stressed. So let me think, do I really want to eat whatever it was I was about to take? Or do I want to go for a walk or call a friend or listen to some music? And most of the time, I don't choose food anymore. But I'm human. Occasionally, once in a while, there's something pretty yummy in the fridge, and I will choose it. But I also now can choose smaller portions. So I will have a small little portion of something that's quite tasty, as opposed to perhaps using ice cream as example. You know, and I'll have a one scoop of it as opposed to the entire carton. I consciously make my choices now, and that only happened because I learned what my triggers were, what was driving me and what my autopilot was doing, and worked on fixing them all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wish I had that one down. I just avoid it. Just, you know, it won't go into my fridge. But, you know.
Well, that's one way, but at least you've made a conscious awareness, yeah. Right? You know you have a weakness.
Yes, but as my living situation changes, I don't imagine that's going to always be the case. That I'm going to be able to say, oh, I'm sorry, that can't go in our freezer because I'm just going
to
eat it.
And, you'd be surprised. I jokingly say I have an addiction to a certain brand of chocolate chip cookies, and I'm really good, but those are ones I just cannot bring home. I know if I bring those home, it's going to be.
Yeah.
So sometimes if I really want them, I'll get them and I'll freeze a bunch of them. So I have to think about it. You know, I have to pull a few out and thaw them. Like,
you know, I tried that too. I actually prefer frozen things. Like, I prefer frozen chocolate.
Okay, so that's maybe not going to work for you.
You know, sometimes, you know, I kind of worked around that one. Yeah.
But at least you're aware of it. And that's important.
Yes. Yes. And then you talk about the fact that we have six other abilities, and they don't necessarily fit in, but they do sort of fit in because, you know, the six other abilities are our memory, our intuition, our reason, our imagination, which becomes very important.
Very important.
Our will and our perception. And our perception is really important because that's also where we're perceiving something that's not necessarily what's real. Like we're, you know, when I have my PMS days, I don't like to look in the mirror.
Okay.
You know, those there are those days where you just like you go, oh, how can I think I'm fat right now? I'm at a perfect weight.
Yeah. And it can work in reverse too. There was times when I was the top 200s or the 300 pounds where somehow or other I convinced myself that I really was just a little heavier than average and maybe nobody would notice.
Oh, okay.
Like our brains can really play some funny tricks on us.
It's true.
But you mentioned the six things, and reason is one of them I think we should just talk about mm-hmm. for a minute. Reason is really rationalizations. Well, we can reason away all our reasons for doing things. I'm always late because I'm heavy because I'm in or out of relationships because, and I told you about mm-hmm. mine where I felt my fat was serving me. That's really was just rationalizing or reasoning. Will is important with weight. It's important when you're trying to change any habits. You do have to have a certain amount of will to create what it is you want to create. But especially in the weight world, we've been taught for so long that it's all about willpower, and that if you failed with any kind of weight shedding or diet attempt, that there was something wrong with you. You didn't have enough willpower. That's all you needed was more willpower. Well, we know now that that isn't true. It's far deeper than that in terms of dealing with the brain, which is what we're talking about here. Imagination is so important because what you imagine about comes about is really what it is. And one of the ways humans use our imaginations incorrectly is we tend to focus on what we don't want rather than what we do want. So again, for me, I spent years walking around in my mind, and to anyone who would listen, complaining about how I didn't want to be fat. I hated being fat. I hated being heavy. And where was I putting my energy? It was all about the negative. And so what did I get? I got more of the negative.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, there's a very different energy behind saying, I want to be slim versus I don't want to be fat. Mm-hmm. First of all, it's empowering. Saying I don't want to be fat almost victimizes me. Like it's sort of at the whim of the gods, whether mm-hmm. you know what I'm going to weigh. Where I want to be slim puts the power and the responsibility back in my hands. I can make choices that will get me that goal, or I can make choices that won't. For me, I chose to work on the choices and incorporate those into my life to get me where I wanted to be. But imagination can play a real great role when you figure this out and you start focusing on the positive. It can play a real great role to get you to your goal so much faster and so much easier. And really, imagination, another fancy word we use for it these days is visualization. Most of the listeners, I'm sure, have heard about visualization. Professional athletes have been using it for years. They would visualize, say, a skier, visualize every swoosh and turn down the hill and how they were going to go around all the flags and how they were going to cross the finish line and the time on the clock. And what that does, again, the mind-body connection. So as the athlete is sitting there imagining, visualizing their successful winning run, their brain actually gets their muscles going. The brain sends the exact same messages to the muscles as would be happening in reality. And so really what it does is it's training your body. Visualization works on training your body. In theory, although I didn't know about it when I was 9 years old and struggling to learn to ride a bike, but in theory, if I had visualized myself doing it successfully, I know I would have been more, it took me a long time to learn to ride a bike. I know I would have been more successful with it. And why did it take me so long? Because everybody said to me, fat kids can't ride bikes.
No.
And so the seed was planted in my mind that I would not be able to ride a bike.
Oh.
So there, that's funny. I hadn't thought about that before, but there's an example of how what you think about are the seeds that are planted. You know, have the reality. So I'm sorry, did I answer that or did I?
Yeah, no, okay, you did, great. Definitely.
So with visualizing for how someone's going to, in terms of weight, what you need to do instead of focusing on, you know, looking in the mirror and how bad you look or looking at pictures of yourself and not liking them because you're heavy, you need to visualize yourself at the weight that you're going to be happy at. And not only just visualize yourself standing there, but visualize yourself wearing the kind of clothes you want to be wearing and doing the kind of activities that you want to do, whether it's, you know, a physical activity in terms of a sport or that sort of thing, or whether it's a hobby you want to do, or whether you just want to walk into a function and look so darn good the jaws drop, you know, whatever's right for you and whatever's spurring you on is what you need to spend some time visualizing. And so what that does is it actually, the brain starts sending messages to the body, preparing the body for being slim, much the same way that an athlete would be preparing their body for swooshing down the slopes.
Right. Now, which is, and it's really important to understand that also that, you know, just like our eyes aren't really what's seeing,
mm-hmm.
you know, when we do these visualizations, our body or our mind doesn't realize that it's not actually happening.
And you know that's true because if you ever watched a horror movie and, you know, or a suspense movie and then, you know, the music's going and everybody, you just feel the energy in the room as people tense up. And, you know, what ends up happening? If it's a really scary movie, you're going to have like a lot of tension in your gut. You may even be drooling a little bit. You know, your eyes are bugged out of your head. And if your blood pressure was measured, it would actually have gone up too. Rationally, you know what you're watching on the screen isn't happening, but physiologically, your brain doesn't know any different. And so it sends all the same messages to your body. You go into like, oh my God, I have to run. I'm scared. Even though, again, rationally, you know it's not happening.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing with weight or sports or anything else.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's talk about wording, because you made it very specific wording in your book when you talked about weight. Mm-hmm. And it was about releasing the weight versus weight loss. And I know that, well, you can say it as well. We know that when you talk about weight loss.
Well, when again, here's our programming. We are programmed right from the day we're born that as soon as we've lost something, as soon as we realize we've lost it, our brain immediately goes to work trying to figure out how to find it. Where is it? How do we get it back? Think about it. Have you ever lost your keys? Good luck focusing on anything else until you find your keys, right? Your brain just goes into find those keys. Whether it's your grocery list, your money, you know, whatever it is that you've lost. Well, if you walk around telling people or even talking to yourself about I'm losing weight, I've lost weight, I you know, any of those kinds of words, well, your brain is programmed that whatever's lost, it's going to start looking for again. And since the brain directs the body, you're going to find yourself doing things, if you're not aware of it, you're going to find yourself doing things that aren't supporting your goal of weighing less that are actually going to help you to weigh more because your brain's looking for that lost weight. Mm-hmm. I like the word shedding or reducing. I'm shedding my weight. I'm reducing my weight. That's the way I talk about it. Other people talk about they are getting rid of the weight, kind of like garbage. You know, you throw garbage out, you don't want it back again. It's mm-hmm. gone, those sorts of things. So that's one of the things, and that's a very simple tip. All the listeners can take that from this is lose the lose and find other ways to talk about what you're doing. It can also be achieving. You can be achieving your ideal weight, achieving your best weight, your healthy weight. So just
optimal weight.
Yeah.
Health and well-being.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Ideal weight. I like ideal weight. It's kind of a positive. And that's the other thing about, we'll get into affirmations, but you know, when we talk about affirmations, it's, you know, it's not about I want to lose weight or I don't want to be fat. I mean, it's really clear that you have to set the way you create your affirmations in a way that is very positive. It's in the present. It's, you know, and sometimes that's a challenge because we do focus on what we don't want.
Mm-hmm. And especially with weight, I think people, you know, I've seen people where they think they're motivating themselves by putting a really heavy picture of themselves on the fridge. And then what happens? Every time they go to the fridge, they look at it. It makes them feel bad. And so what do? They go down that rabbit hole again. Right. There's an equation in life that I think is really interesting where it's thoughts create feelings, feelings create actions, and actions create results. So if you're looking at something that you're thinking is a motivational tool, i.e. a picture of you at a not great weight, and you're using that as a motivational tool, on a deeper level, every time you look at that picture, it's going to cause you some pain because you don't want to be at that weight. And so you may not even be aware of this thinking, but if that's causing you some pain, and by pain, I mean you might be thinking, oh, I'll never get slim, what's the point, I'll always be fat, any of those sorts of thoughts, or look at me, who am I kidding, you know, any of that kind of stuff. What ends up happening, your thoughts create feelings. Well, you end up feeling bad. If you're having those kinds of thoughts, you're feeling bad. And so what ends up happening? Well, feeling bad, for those of us who are emotional eaters, feeling bad causes us to go to the fridge. And so going to the fridge, what kind of actions do those create? Well, that creates the results you don't want. The weight either doesn't go away or you attract even more of it. You end up with even more of it. So a much more positive way to do it is to switch it around. Have a picture of yourself at a weight you like on the fridge. Again, whatever your ideal weight is. And I'm not a big proponent of skinny, skinny, skinny. I think, you know, everybody, some people are just naturally slim and that's fine. I think most of us, when we're trying to shed some pounds, have an unrealistic view of ourselves. But find a picture of yourself that you like, put that up on the fridge. And then every time you go to the fridge, when you look at that picture, hopefully, and you may need to train yourself a little bit on this. At first, it can be like, oh, I'll never look like that again. So you need to catch those thoughts and change them.
Therefore, don't put a picture of you, you know, when you were 10.
No, you want something realistic. Exactly. You know, if you're in your 40s, don't put up a picture of yourself when you were 18. Because, you know, if you're having a bit of a midlife thing, that might cause you some problems. But find a nice recent picture of yourself. And no matter how far away you are from that, look at it and know you can get back there. If you were there once, you can be there twice. Mm-hmm. And hopefully you can be there forever. So look at that and be filled with hope and then do your affirmations again, which always have to be done in the positive and in the present tense. Affirmations get knocked by a lot of people that they don't work.
Yeah.
And I know they work. I've used them myself and I know they work. They didn't used to work for me because I didn't understand the formula. So the first part of the formula is they have to be in present tense. Just like we were talking about how the brain doesn't know with a movie whether what it's watching is real or not. Well, it also doesn't know future tense, past tense, whatever. The brain is always in the now, in the here and now. So your affirmation has to be in the here and now, not I will be slim. Because if you're focusing on will being slim, will never get here. It's always going to be tomorrow. So it's going to be today. And you always want to focus in the positive. So an affirmation is not, you wouldn't do it in the negative. I don't want to be fat. It's I am slim. Because, again, the brain can't recognize negatives. Just like it can't recognize past tenses, it also can't recognize negatives. So if you're focusing on, I don't want to be fat, it doesn't hear the don't. It hears, I want to be fat. And again, it's going to direct you. You know, you're going to find yourself grazing in the fridge unconsciously. So do them in the positive and do them in the present tense. And even if it feels like you're a big liar the first few times you do them, they work pretty quickly. And you can even add the power to them by looking at yourself in the mirror. That helps your brain recognize even faster that what you're saying is referring to you. So, you know, I'm so happy and grateful. I always like to start with I'm so happy and grateful. I'm so happy and grateful now that I have achieved my ideal weight and I'm living a fabulous life. Well, the first few times I said something like that and looked at myself in the mirror, I really did feel like a big liar. But I trusted the people who had given me this information and I thought, well, what have I got to lose? There's that word, what, you know. It's not going to hurt me to try it. So I stuck with it for a little while, longer than I ever had before. And within a couple of weeks, there definitely was some changes in how I was interacting with the world. I was starting to interact much more like a slim person, even though my physical self hadn't gotten there yet. Mm-hmm. Than I had been a few weeks prior. So I'm sold on affirmations. I know they work when done correctly.
Mm-hmm. And when done correctly is, you know, also having the awareness to work through all the things that when you say them and your...
The resistance to them?
Well, the resistance and the counter beliefs and all of that stuff that comes up that says, yeah, really?
Yeah.
You know, you got to be aware enough to know when those come in so that you can shift those as well.
There's that awareness thing again.
Yeah.
It's all about awareness. Huge. Yep.
And I mean, that's really what we're coming into. This is kind of the dawning of our awareness and higher states of consciousness. But the only way we can get to higher states of consciousness is to be aware. So
exactly.
It's all coming full circle in this new little world that we're...
Do you think there'll be a song? You know, in the 70s, there was a dawning of the age of Aquarius.
Well, and, you know, ironically, that song just came true like on February 14th.
Really?
This year.
Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Well, that apparently all the alignment of what that song sang about came on February 14th this year. So that was kind of interesting.
Well,
now, you also say that it's really important to have a smile and to not just have a smile on the outside, but to feel the smile on the inside.
You have done a very good job of reading this book. I appreciate that. You want to always feel good. Again, one of the override mechanisms that the brain has is it's always going to want to make you feel good and will work towards what is going to make you feel good. So if you're smiling as you're doing your affirmations, looking at yourself in the mirror and speaking to yourself and smiling, that's going to fast track the process. As you're doing your visualizations and you're imagining yourself and, you know, again, swooshing down the slopes or lying in a bikini or dancing or whatever it is, you know, whatever your reasons are, smile on your visualize, smile on your imagination, because again, that sets the brain up. Oh, this feels good. This feels good. I like this. I want more of this. So in a way, you almost create an addiction to smiling, which, you know, really, that's not a bad thing.
Well, it's a great thing because, you know, that brings our heart into it. And
yeah.
It brings us, making us feel good. I mean, it makes, and that's the whole, you know, that's one of our biggest problems, I think, in society, is that we're, you know, kind of conditioned on somebody else making us happy or something else making us happy. So if we can make ourselves happy, you know, because when we smile, we feel happy.
Exactly.
Or, you know,
it actually causes a physical change, like a physiological change in the body, just the act of moving the corners of your mouth up. So even if you're faking it at the time, if you hold it long enough, you will start to feel it.
Yes, exactly. Yes. I do really like how you start your affirmations with, I am so happy and grateful now. And I think that, you know, the more people think about that, and because gratitude is a huge shifter in how we approach things. And I think, you know, when you can really truly feel gratitude in your life, that really allows us to let go of some of the things that have been, you know, keeping us stuck.
Mm-hmm. In regards to weight, one of the things I often hear people say, because everybody talks to me about their weight now, I often hear people say is, you know, I hate my body, or it's not fair. Why did I, you know, why was I given this? And why is it, you know, and I used to be the same way. I understand why they're saying it. But let me ask you, how do you think you're going to treat your body, your physical self? How do you think you're going to treat your physical self if you are grateful just for having a body, regardless of how healthy or overweight or unhealthy it is? If you're actually grateful for having it, you're going to treat it with a little bit or a lot more care and respect than you would treat it than something you hate. And so right there, that just sets up a very different course of thinking, the way your brain operates. So I am so happy and grateful now that I have achieved my ideal body weight. I have reduced my weight, whatever it, you know, whatever, however, again, however anybody wants to word it. But gratitude, another thing I'd heard that about gratitude that I thought was really interesting, that affirmations or prayer, you know, depending on whether you believe in the universe or God or whatever, and that's not tonight's discussion, but whatever you believe in, gratitude or affirmations or prayer is you sending the request out. Gratitude is how your request is answered, that it flows along, that your whatever it is you're looking for flows along the gratitude channel to come back to you. So if you don't have any gratitude, you've put up roadblocks, and it doesn't matter how badly you want what you're asking for, it just absolutely cannot get to you. So be grateful for everything you have. Even if you weigh 1,000 pounds, be grateful for that body. It's the only one you have in this lifetime, and you will start to treat it better and treat yourself better by being grateful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Because you can't, I mean, yeah.
Think about people in your life, the people you're grateful for. Will you treat them a lot better than the people, I would hope, than the people you don't like or have, you know, hate, for lack of a better word, or whatever. Like, just the very act of gratitude instills a certain kindness, a thankfulness. It's a softer sort of energy, and it's a lot nicer to be around.
Yeah. There is a purity to gratitude that you don't really get. If even when you try to forgive somebody, I mean, until you can find that gift that each situation has, you know, you really lose, you don't really heal.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when you can find gratitude, even like, as you say, the smallest little thing, and it can be whatever, I mean, focus on some of your strengths that we'll talk about later, you know, find a strength that is you and focus on that, and then have gratitude that you have this unique being that is you, and see the gifts in all of that.
I never thought I would be grateful for the fact that I weighed over 300 pounds at some point in my life. I mean, when I was in that, what I called hell, when I was in the middle of it, I never thought there would be a day I would, never even occurred to me. But now, because of that, I've written a book. I now do coaching. My life has taken a very different turn that I wouldn't even be on this path if I hadn't weighed, you know, if that hadn't been my journey to end up weighing that and figure my way out of it. Mm-hmm. And I really like helping people. So I get a huge amount of satisfaction now from being able to, I'm grateful for the opportunity to be able to help other people and guide them out of it, hopefully faster than it took me through my own self-discovery. So it's funny. I can now honestly say with 100% integrity, I'm grateful for those years in my life.
Mm-hmm. Which
took a while to get there, but
yeah, I'm sure. But that's where you have to get to.
Yeah.
I'm truly.
It shaped who I am.
Yeah. Yeah. So you talk about paying attention to the negative emotions. And that comes up, I think, when we look at other people and we have judgments, or, you know, there's jealousy and envy and anger. And, you know, we need to be committed to figuring out the why.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we're not aware of where these are coming from, then you're just going to sabotage yourself.
Right. You don't even know what they can be doing to you. I don't remember where I first learned this one, but I did have to take a look at how I was thinking about other slim people. And I discovered, although in my heart of hearts, I really wanted to be slim. Mm-hmm. In my heart of hearts, I actually had a huge amount of resentment for people who had achieved what I had yet been able to achieve. I really resented them. Well, that sets up a disconnect in the brain. On my conscious level, I thought I was okay with it and I was in alignment with what I was wanting. But on a deeper level, I had this huge amount of resentment. So that sets up a disconnect. Remember I said how the brain always wants to feel good? Well, it turned out that there was, on one side of my brain, I was saying I was feeling good, but on the other side of my brain, I was saying I wasn't. If I looked at somebody slim and that filled me with resentment, that's not a nice feeling. Mm-hmm. Your brain doesn't want to keep you in that state. So what ends up happening, the brain, I'm simplifying it, but the brain looks at it and goes, okay, looking at that slim woman made her feel bad. Eating makes her feel good temporarily. So there's a disconnect. So instead of, you know what, we're just going to stick with what we know is feeling good and just avoid the what's feeling bad. So I learned to actually silently bless people who had what I wanted. And that's a form of gratitude, I think. Mm-hmm. So if I'd see some great, you know, great looking, stylishly dressed woman walking down the street, instead of being sort of jealous and envious that she had what I wanted, I would look at her and I had to train myself. It's awareness again. I had to train myself. I'd look at her and go, wow, look at her. She looks great. Like, look at those shoes and look at those boots and look at the wiggle in her walk. And that's what I've got. And I sort of turn it back around me and make it all positive and feel good. And that really helped. And now I can look at, you know, I'm not getting any younger. And there's certainly lots of girls out there who, you know, have what I wish I'd had when I was in my 20s or whatever. But I can look at them and really go, I just think it's lovely. Like, it's beauty of all sorts, you know, whoever you deem attractive. And my version of what I think is attractive may not be your version and may not be, you know, anybody else's. But those sorts of things, when you see somebody who's got something you want, bless it, because it opens up the flow of gratitude. Mm-hmm. And then the universe or God or whatever you want to call it can deliver it. But if you've got resentment, it's like a huge roadblock and you're not going to get it. Same thing even with money. If you resent people with money, you're never going to have money because you're not going to be open to listening to the type of advice. You're probably not going to even be around those kinds of people. And it's the same thing, you know, if an ideal body weight is what you want. If you resent those people, you're not going to be around them. You're not going to listen to what they have to say. You're not going to look at how they deal with and interact with food. You're going to stay in your comfort zone on that couch and you're just not going to do anything. So,
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's really amazing. And you talk about judgment, and I think, you know, we judge ourselves so dramatically and we judge others as well. I mean, it's really, we're such a victim mentality. You know, our society is so, you know, wanting to blame instead of take responsibility. And so we're so consistently focused on judgment.
Yeah, I think that's something that happens right from the very first days, you know, from the beginning of life. It's just humans, we just the way we are. We're comparing, we're judging, we come up short. So, you know, we try to put the other person down instead of raising ourselves up. There's different ways we go about judging. But ultimately, it's a negative sort of thing. Each one of us is unique. You need to find your own special gifts. You know, judgment's a huge one. Oh, that could be a whole other show. We could just talk.
Yeah, definitely.
We could just talk about judgment. Definitely with ourselves. I think we treat ourselves. We're our harshest critics with ourselves, for sure. And again, that starts right from the get go. I've heard it said that a human baby between the ages of 0 to 5 will hear the word no 5,000 times. Now, our parent, you know, but knows a negative word, and it's all about what we can't do. Don't touch that. Don't burn yourself. Don't. So we start to become programmed in a way that we're always looking for the don't and the negative as opposed to the can and the positive. What I found with my, and this is where we get into our inner voice. How do we talk to ourselves? How do we judge ourselves? Well, that little voice we all have in the back of our head that, again, most of the time we're not aware of it. Sometimes we are. And the judgment, what I found when I started to pay attention to my self-talk and really started to listen to the way I talked to myself, it was awful. I couldn't believe I spoke to myself that way, because I certainly wouldn't have spoken to any other person that way. And it was, I was way tougher on myself. So again, awareness. Once I was aware of how I was speaking to myself, I could work on changing it. But I couldn't change it till I knew about it. And so I changed it. Am I perfect now? No, it still every once in a while creeps up. But again, now I can go, okay, wait a minute. That's just the old tapes playing. It doesn't have anything to do with what's really going on. And I can consciously, you know, change the tape. But there are things, you know, for years, I mean, years, again, I blamed everything that was ever happened to me that went wrong. I blamed it on being fat. Being a victim is easy. You can sit around and be a victim and just say the wind's blowing and, you know, not take any responsibility for it. But when you take responsibility, it's actually very freeing and very empowering. Totally, it can be scary at first, but instead of sitting around, like by taking, in terms of weight, by taking control and taking responsibility for my weight, instead of having the attitude of I'm just a victim, like I don't know why I keep gaining weight, I don't know why I'm so tied to food. Who knew what was going to happen to me? The slightest thing, you know, there I was in the fridge. But by taking responsibility for it, it empowered me to make the choices that eventually led me to where I wanted to be. I wasn't just like bobbing around on the sea like a little yellow ducky sort of thing with no control. And so it's more than a bit of a mind shift. But when you get that, when you really get that, everything starts to change in your life for better. Yeah. You are not powerless over the food.
Yeah.
You think you are, but you're not. You have a huge amount of power over that. You just need to be able to tap into it.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about loving ourselves, because I think that's a huge area that we have such a difficult process with, again, because probably of our self-judging and the huge judgments we make on ourselves. Yep. But we also have had, you know, people tell us things about ourselves before the age 5 that we...
And after age 5.
And after.
They still, you know, the whole sticks and stones will hurt my bones, but words will never hurt me.
So not so true.
Wrong. So wrong. Yet another example of how we got led down the garden path. Words can hurt far more than sticks and stones will ever hurt. Yeah. And again, yeah, someone says something to you and you happen to have a weak moment. You're maybe not feeling on top of your game and someone says something to you. Well, that can reinforce that moment for the rest of your life. And those tapes again can play over and over and over again and can really end up, you know, they're not true. Like in the book, I talk about the example again of me trying to learn to ride my bike. I had a few moments where I fell and hurt myself and somebody walking by would be like, oh, you're such a clumsy kid. I grew up for years thinking I was clumsy. Bull in the china shop is what I thought it was. Now, I'm not a ballerina, but I'm not nearly as clumsy and oafish as some people had led me to believe. So maybe three people in my whole life caught me in clumsy moments. But those three people happened to catch me at a moment where I was weak and they said something that ingrained itself on me and caused me to react and behave a certain way. Not for the rest of my life. I figured it out eventually. But the same thing can be happening with your weight. Somebody, especially for those of us who were heavy as children or who have been heavy for a long time, that becomes part of almost sort of who we are. And if who you are has been something that's gotten you some negative feedback, that can play into how you end up not liking yourself because of whatever it was. So again, for me, the case of weight, there was a lot less heavy kids back then than there are now. So I was a bit of an anomaly and people didn't know what to make of me. And so I was picked on a lot. I was made fun of, you know, all those sorts of things. And so by being treated negatively by enough people, you know, the other kids in the schoolyard, that sort of thing, I started to believe it. And as soon as I started to believe it, what have I done? I've programmed myself. And, you know, how do you treat someone if you're picking on them or being negative or bullying them? You don't treat them very well. So what happened? I didn't treat myself very well. And learning to love yourself for some people can be the hardest part of this journey.
I think it's the hardest part for everybody. I don't think we were ever taught how to love ourselves. I mean, everybody has their own story, but seriously,
we were taught the opposite. Don't be conceited. Don't, you know, who are you? You know, all those kinds of things, right?
So I don't know that this has necessarily anything to do with weight. I think we all have self-esteem issues. I think especially as women, because women were, you know, were put down much more than than men. They were told, you know, to be strong. Now men were told not to cry, which, you know,
they have their own set of challenges.
You know, yourself out.
There's a reason they're like they are. Yeah. Right. Exactly. You know, they've got all whatever their male programming is. Yeah, so, yeah.
And, you know, women tend, as one of the things you put on there about protection, I mean, women tend to gain weight to protect themselves. Women tend to do, you know, things that, you know, we have a benefit from what we do to ourselves.
Well, from the day one, we're called the weaker sex, right?
Yeah, so yeah, it's just, and you know, I have a feeling that that was because they wanted, needed to control us because we aren't the weaker sex.
Well, again,
sex.
That's a whole other show we can do. Let's not even go down that road.
But true.
Yeah, but true.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think, you know, learning to love ourselves, and I mean, that's a whole area that really needs to be, you know, examined and to really understood, and especially as women, I think there's a huge need right now for us to really grasp and understand what that means on a deeper, deeper level.
I actually agree with you, but I'd even go one further and say it's humanity, men and women. We've all got our struggles.
Oh,
we've
absolutely.
All got our challenges, you know, that absolutely. Kind of thing. The thing with self-love, and if those of you who are listening, if the idea of loving yourself causes you like an extreme reaction, you think that could never happen, or, you know, who am I, I'm not worth it, or whatever, don't even try to love yourself. Try to just even like yourself. Let's just start there. And if even that's too much of a stretch, let's get you to where you at least don't hate yourself. Like, let's get you to neutral, and we'll work on it from there. Mm-hmm. So don't get freaked out if you're listening to this and thinking that's too big a stretch, I can't do it. But again, it comes down to, how are you going to treat something you love and respect? You're going to treat it an awful lot better than something you dislike and have no respect for. You know, if you respect your house, you're going to treat it, you know, your garden's going to look nice. You're probably going to make sure the paint's sort of fresh, you know, those sorts of things, as opposed to if you don't like your house and you disrespect your house. Those are those houses that you drive by after 20 years and you see them boarded up and you think, you know, how did that happen? Well, it's the same thing with us. You need to respect yourself and love yourself and treat yourself with kindness, which means allowing yourself to make mistakes. In terms of the weight world, that means that if you've made a decision that you're going to stay away from X food or limit your portion or exercise more or whatever decisions you're making in terms of changing your habits, you're only human. If you fall off the wagon, don't start berating yourself and going down that road. I knew you couldn't stick with it. Who are you? You're a failure and all that kind of stuff. Don't even go down that road. But you need to know your tendency is to go down that road, again, to be aware of it and stop it. That's what I said at the beginning. Like, if you aren't willing to step outside your comfort zone and make changes, forgive yourself for that and just move on and enjoy your life as it is and stop trying to strive for something. Like, we all need to forgive ourselves and let go. And if you do fall off the wagon, don't go down the rabbit hole, because again, it's the thoughts create the feelings, create the actions, right? So if you're thinking, oh, I knew you couldn't do it, you know, there you are again, you've blown it again, you've gained a pound or five or whatever. Well, that's a thought, and that's going to create a feeling. And the feeling is, oh, I feel bad. You know, it's not empowering. And then what's going to happen? You're going to, you know, eat in this particular case. Allow yourself the freedom. Okay, so I fell off the wagon last night. I ate more than I was supposed to eat. Well, that was yesterday. You can't do anything about the past. We live in the moment. Forgive yourself. Just like, okay, I did it. Let's move on. Make a different choice in the now that's going to empower you and move towards it. But don't spend hours fretting over how you messed up, because that's not going to propel you forward. That's going to keep you stuck in the past. So forgive yourself, love yourself, and recognize you're human and you're going to make mistakes.
And I like how you suggest to people to, you know, focus on your positive qualities. Like, and if you can't think of any, then talk to some of your closest friends, because you know that they, again, it's about perception. They will see things about you that you don't see.
They don't live inside your head, so they don't hear that little voice going, you can't do that, you can't do that, who do you think you are? Sort of stuff. All they see is a competent, fabulous person. Yeah. And we all have areas of strengths, and we all have areas of weakness. But I guarantee there's something you are good at. There's something ever. There's a gift each one of us have. You might be a great crossword puzzle doer, gardener, baker, mother, father, teacher, zip liner, bungee cord jumper, you know, whatever it is, whatever, you know. So if you don't know what that is, ask your friends, ask your, maybe not your family, that can be a touchy one. Ask your friends, coworkers, find something you're good at and start your affirmations there, because at least then you'll believe that. I'm so happy and grateful now that I'm a great crossword puzzle doer. Well, if you say that over and over again, that's going to empower you. You're going to sit up a little taller. You're going to carry yourself a little a little straighter, and you're going to not treat yourself with the same kind of disdain or disrespect that you maybe started with before. Mm-hmm. Maybe you're a great something bigger, you know, maybe, mm-hmm. but everybody's got something that they do well.
And
so
focus on that.
Focus on that and start from there.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And don't focus on all the other things that you're not.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's that positive thing again, right?
Yeah, that positive thing. It's really important.
Yeah.
Really important. Facing your fears. What I loved about this chapter is it talks about something I've always been passionate about and believed in, which is that, you know, there really only are two pure emotions. One is fear, and you wrote joy. I say love, but they're both the same coin. So I can't express this enough to people and how we get focused, you know, on all of the negative things. Like, that's really just one thing. It's our fears. And we need to understand them, and we need to go further, and we need to, you know, dig deeper and get more aware about where these fears, we don't even necessarily need to know anymore where they originated, but we need
to. You need to know you have them.
Exactly.
So again, so it's awareness. It all comes down to awareness. Mm-hmm. Fear. It's a big one. And again, I agree with you totally. There's the two pure emotions. I had people actually get angry with me mm-hmm. when I talked about this. I was like, no, well, anger's not fear.
I know.
Okay, well, let's break it down a little bit. What are you angry about? Well, I'm angry that Joe Blow's, you know, stole my car. Well, okay, so let's get a little deeper. Where are you going with that? Well, I'm angry that I'm not going to be able to get to work. So this is simplifying it. Mm-hmm. Well, okay, so what happens if you don't get to work? Well, I'm angry that my boss is going to be mad at me. So eventually you get down to, okay, Joe Blow stole your car. That made you angry because you're not going to be able to get to work, and you might get yelled at, and you're afraid of being yelled at. That's a simplification, but it's the same thing with your weight. There's something that you're fearing. And even if it's, this is a tricky one to, it is a tricky one. So fear, humans are motivated more by fear, I think they say, than they are by fear of loss is a greater motivator for more humans than actually achieving something that you want. Fear, it's the exact opposite of joy. It's hard to be, or loving. It's hard to be fear. It's hard to be joyful if you're in fear. And with weight, until you figure out what you're afraid of and how your weight is working as an armor for you, you're not going to be able to let go of it because it's serving you. There's that benefit thing again, mm-hmm. right? It all starts to tie in. So in my particular case, what I was afraid of, I mentioned I was afraid of being abandoned. Well, I didn't think that was a fear at first. Like, it was more like I was angry maybe that, you know, some guy had dumped me or something. But when you start to get a little deeper about it, it really comes down to, what are you afraid of? And I was afraid that either no one was going to love me, or that I would be loved and then even worse, lose it. Mm-hmm. So I kept the weight on because in my mind and my story, that was what worked for me.
And, you know, I think that's a core fear in just about everybody. And if you go deep enough, and whether you believe in God or the universe, but, you know, our greatest fear is that we felt that God abandoned us here on this planet.
No, I hadn't even gone that deep with it.
Yeah.
But yeah.
You know, yeah. Because of all the garbage we were fed about the Bible and how we were judged and how Adam and Eve and that whole story.
Right, there's judgment and all that. Yeah,
that we were abandoned and that we were the ultimate sin. And so,
yeah, there's a nice thing. You're born into this life as the ultimate sin. Okay, that's another show. I'm coming back a few times.
Perfect.
You're really, how are you supposed to grow up feeling good about yourself when you're told that you're the ultimate sin? I'm not of that particular persuasion, no. And so I was never spoken to that way, but I know other people who were, so yeah. Mm-hmm. So certainly can be.
You know, and so I, you know, you took it to one degree, which I totally understand, because that was my story and definitely my core issue, because I was abandoned as a child.
Oh.
And, you know, from an adoption to then my father at 13 dying, and so it just like completely overtook my whole story. And
right.
That I was able to, especially with men, was my big thing, because it was actually the biological father that forced my mother to do that, even though just through.
We have a bunch of radio shows coming out of today, don't we?
But
for sure.
It's true. Like, yeah. There's, yeah. You know, I could see how that story played out many, many times.
Yeah.
And it was very interesting. But a story that.
It's just a story.
It's just a story.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Well, good. I'm glad you figured that one out. I'm sure it changed your life.
Well, it has, and it's still playing. Like it's you know, it's still one of those, you know, because it was such a core deep.
Paradigms or deep core beliefs don't change overnight, and they don't change themselves. And so, you know, you've worked on that one, and hopefully it's meant that you've got some better relationships in your life, and you feel one of the best ones is with yourself now, and, you know, then, you know, people you date, that kind of thing. And in terms of weight, it's exact same thing with weight. You need to figure out what your core beliefs about yourself and about weight are, and then work on changing them to ones that are more, that are going to get you closer to where you want to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
This has been an excellent conversation. I hope that I'm enjoying it. I hope everybody out there is.
I'm sure they are. So let's end with your one thought that I really liked, which diets only treat the symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not our resolution.
No.
And so we have to, you know, work on ourselves to figure out, you know, what is it that we really need? What is it that will, you know, help us love ourselves and face our fears, you know, that awareness that we need.
Yep.
And we didn't really get into your perfection thing, but that was a really powerful journey that you went on and discovered about, you know, your own perfection.
Well, diets are all about right and wrong, right? Mm-hmm. There's this amount of food, and if you, or those foods and these amounts, and if you don't stick with that, you know, you've eaten a bad food or you have wrong food or you've had a lousy day. I think dieting almost breeds perfectionism.
Mm-hmm.
It's all or nothing. Diets don't allow you a gray area. And that's what I'm saying about forgive yourself. Life is full of gray areas. It isn't black and white. And perfectionism is very black and white. I'm either doing it perfectly or I'm not doing it at all. And that steals the joy. And, you know, we could have a whole conversation for an mm-hmm. hour about perfectionism. But definitely, I was definitely perfectionism. And I fight that every day. Sometimes I think maybe I'm letting myself off the hook too easy. It's like, well, the old me would have, you know, would have worked harder at it. And it's like, yeah, but the old you was, you know, not really very happy and weighed 300 pounds and, you know, it wasn't a lot of fun to be around. The new me is just going to let that go at that. So it doesn't mean I don't strive for excellence, but, you know, I recognize being human, that to err is human. I mean, nobody mm-hmm. said it better than Shakespeare, right? Mm-hmm. To err is human. And so as a human, you have to recognize that you're not going to be perfect
mm-hmm.
despite your best intentions.
And so, you know, don't treat the symptoms.
Oh, sorry. Right. Yeah, there we go. Yeah. So it comes back to that equation I was talking about where thoughts create feelings, feelings create actions, and actions create results. Dieting misses the first thing about your thoughts creating the feelings. Dieting is an action. It's dealing with the action. So it temporarily changes your results. If you go on a diet and you're limiting your food and choices and amounts and everything else, that's an action, and you are going to end up weighing less on the scale. But because you haven't delved down into the deeper level of what are you thinking in the first place, it's a short-term measure. It's a Band-Aid measure. And so eventually what's going to happen, your brain is going to go back into its comfort zone, back into the areas that it's comfortable with, and it's going to go back down into those thoughts. And if you haven't changed those thoughts, and your thoughts are going to be different than my thoughts, are going to be different than everybody else's thoughts. That's the personal part. But if you haven't changed those thoughts, it's no wonder you regain the weight again. Not you. Anyone regains the weight again after a diet is over. You haven't dealt with the fundamentals. You've come in halfway through the program. The other thing, too, is most diets are very, very, they're strict. They're depriving. And they're actually very controlling. One of the things I've heard from people, and I was the same way over and over again, is that I feel like I'm in control when I'm on a diet. The diet's mm-hmm. controlling you. You're not controlling yourself. The diet tells you what to eat, how much to eat, quite often when to eat, where to eat, how to eat. You've completely given up control to the diet. Mm-hmm. And so it isn't until the control comes from a deeper place. It's not even control. It's just a shift in priorities. It's a shift in what you need. I don't need to eat the way I used to eat anymore because I don't need to be heavy. So it all sort of, am I making sense?
Mm-hmm.
It all plays in. And so, yeah, I've gone off on another tangent there. It's the mint tea you served me.
Well, it's been a pleasure.
Oh, thank you.
And
for me too.
Yeah, I think we could definitely do a few shows.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you'd like to say?
I'd just like to invite anybody who's curious about all this and would like to learn more about it. Don't be scared of it. You know, in some ways, addressing your thoughts is one of the more difficult things you'll ever do in your life, but I also guarantee it will be one of the most worthwhile things you have ever done in your life. And it's very, very short-term pain. You know, there might be a couple of days, a couple of hours, a couple of weeks, maybe even a couple of months of discomfort as you're working through it all and figuring it all out. But assuming you got 20, 30, 40, 50 years left to live, that's a pretty small payoff, a pretty small price to pay for getting the results that you want. So I invite you to take a look at my website, which is www.whyareyouwaiting.com. And of course, waiting is spelled W-E-I-G-H-T-I-N-G, whyareyouwaiting.com. Please join our site. There's a number of different ways to interact with the site. There's a free membership where you can just, and please take advantage of that. You'll get newsletters, you know, stay in touch, some specials, that kind of thing. And then if you really want to delve into this more, we have two other levels. There's the basic level, which is a subscription level. There's a small fee per month, which will get you more information, more access, a 10% discount off of any of the books and products that we sell. And then there's, if you're really serious about this, we have what we call the Triumph Coaching Program. Triumph because this will help you finally triumph over your weight woes. And what we do is we take all the concepts that are in the book, but we work together as a group, limited to 10 people, work together as a group to help uncover each group member's reasons and reprogram them and get them seeing themselves in different ways and learning to love themselves, all the things we talked about here and even some ones we didn't talk about, such as managing change. When your weight changes, so much more changes in your life than just your clothing size, and most people aren't prepared for that. So there's all kinds of things we can help with there, and I invite you to take a look at the Triumph program and you know, join us, because it's really changing lives. What we're doing with Triumph is changing lives. We can get you off the diet roller coaster. We can help you, whether it's 20 pounds or 200 pounds that you've struggled with forever and you want to get rid of. I guarantee you that if you do the work with me and we go through it, you're going to come out the other end a different person. And so if you're a different person inside, you're going to be a different person outside. And it's my goal now that every overweight person in the world knows about the things that took me years to figure out. I didn't write any, I wrote the book, but I didn't invent any of this. It was just, it's all other people's things that I've put together and just sort of systemized. So again, to help fast track. So whyareyouwaiting.com. At the very least, join our newsletter list. And if you'd like a copy of the book, you can order it through the website as well. It's only available on whyareyouwaiting.com. So please check that out. And I look forward to, you know, hearing from everybody out there and let's get the world back to being a slim, healthy world again. There's far too many overweight people who are out there hurting. So if that's not you, please tell somebody you know who needs this information. We have to get the word out. And thank you, Lori, for the opportunity. This has been great.
Good. I appreciate it. And it was fun. So, yeah. All right. So take care. We'll be back on Thursday night.